it going, everybody? Dieter Kurtenbach here, Warriors HQ podcast with Mark Medina after game one of the Warriors' first round series with the Los Angeles Clippers. Warriors win 121-104, which I think everyone expected. I just don't think anyone expected it in the way it went down. Mark, your immediate takeaway of Saturday night's game.
Well, I think there were some things that we all expected. We expected a win. We expected Steph Curry to be amazing. We expected Kevin Durant to be amazing. We expected Draymond Green to be amazing. We also expected that the Clippers, they wouldn't have a chance to win, but they'd make it kind of respectable because they have a good bench. They like to be chippy. I think that what Warriors were hoping is this would be a nice playoff debut for DeMarcus Cousins. Didn't get that. But I think by and large, it really doesn't matter because the Warriors have so much all-star talent and they have the playoff intensity.
No question. Warriors run away with this one after Stephen Curry kind of goes on some of those patented Curry flurries. He had 8 3-pointers in the contest. Let's just get to the Cousins thing from the get-go. It's not the good news, but we got to mention it. Cousins was really, really bad in this game. I mean, it's not the worst we've seen him play, but a lot of the worries that were extremely valid, I'd say 6-8 weeks ago, seem to come back. And I want to go to what Draymond Green said in his press conference. I'll paraphrase, which is essentially, one, of course he's going to play a little bit differently. It's game one of the postseason. Him and Landry Shamet of the Clippers, it was both game one. And there's no separation because DeMarcus has been in the league for a decade in that regard, which I thought was a rather extreme statement, but I take Draymond's word at it. I never questioned Draymond Green's quotes. And the second part of it, which I thought was incredibly insightful, was Draymond mentioning that DeMarcus has never been schemed against. Even being the number one guy on a team for so long, he's never had a team really draw up a game plan to attack him. And that's what happens in the playoffs. So this is something I bring up with Steve Kerr all the time, and he's always been very kind as to sort of lend insight into this. You don't actually scheme that much in the regular season. You kind of just throw your best out there and you hope it happens. Obviously, for the Warriors, that results in a lot of wins because they have more talent. But in the playoffs, you can really get into some minutiae, and you have things, and we'll talk about this later, like Patrick Beverley, a 6-foot-tall guy, guarding Kevin Durant, a 7-foot-tall guy. And you have the Clippers putting DeMarcus Cousins into pick and roll again and again and again. He's going to have to adjust, and certainly he's talented enough to adjust, but the way that he handled himself tonight, he fouled out of the game with like 6 minutes left. The emotions that he was playing with, it's going to be really interesting. I would not guarantee it under any circumstance to say that DeMarcus is going to bounce back in game two and everything's going to be hunky-dory. He's really going to have to dig deep and find something here because the Clippers are coming after him, and frankly, he was unplayable in game one, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it was disappointing because it seemed like he was going to have the complete opposite game to begin the game. They, rightfully so, left him wide open for his first three. He can that. And then that was going to be the strategy moving forward. But I think that there were a lot of plays where he showed off his playmaking skills, his facilitate, and then all of a sudden his shots aren't falling, whether it's mid-range or at the rim, and then he's gained a lot of foul calls. And frankly, I think during the regular season, as much as DeMarcus shouldn't complain to the refs and be that demonstrative, I can understand why he gets frustrated with foul calls. There's a lot in the regular season where maybe it looks like he's taking a charge and they call blocking. But here, he committed fouls. Like, I remember there was one foul early.
Are you talking about the hands up the entire way, but he bumps him on the hip?
Yes, yeah, exactly. He was saying, hey, I had my hands up the entire way, but when you look at the replay, he actually didn't at all.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can't do that in the playoffs.
It shows like a fundamental, I don't know if he was being like clever, but like it does show like a fundamental like misunderstanding of what the rule is. Like, my hands were up. It doesn't matter, dude. You hip checked him. Like, it was a little bit ridiculous. He had 6 turnovers in this game, a lot of them in the low post. That's just unacceptable, even on a team that had a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, and specifically with that foul, wasn't even just hip checking. Like, he was lying about having his hands up. He swatted at the ball, so like, he can't really sell the call there.
I didn't see the arms come down. I saw the hip check, and I go, "That's a clear foul." It was rough. And again, we saw Andrew Bogut in this game, and I wouldn't be completely shocked if the Warriors go back and look at the tape and say, we might need more Andrew Bogut in this game, because in particular with Montrezl Harrell, who was a dominant force for a good stretch in this contest, a lot of that off of the pick and roll with Lou Williams. You just can't play Cousins against Lou Williams. I think that that's maybe what we learned in game one. But with Harrell as well, he's just a bulldog. You just can't stop him. The Warriors needed some rim protection. Durant provided a little. You don't necessarily want Draymond in that fray because you need him to play the full 48, and you're going to pick up fouls when you're protecting the rim. This might be a very good Bogut series, which is, of course, the opposite of what I thought going into it, which is I thought Boogie was going to eat all day every day because they were going to leave him wide open.
Yeah, well, a great point here that brings into two other points. I saw that during a timeout, Andrew Bogut was giving DeMarcus Cousins tips, and I thought that was very revealing because – in normal circumstances, pre-Achilles, DeMarcus Cousins doesn't need tips from Andrew Bogut. But in this context, he does, because Andrew Bogut knows the Warriors' defensive schemes. You know, he's only here as an insurance policy, but because of his experience before, you know, from 2012, 2016, he knows what they need. That's number one. Number two, he was part of that second unit that, like, just wet the bed to open the second quarter. And that was the only way the Clippers got into the game, because their whole offensive production, for the most part, was Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. And then Steve Kerr countered by going death lineup in the second quarter, which is something they usually save later in the game. And it obviously worked out for obvious reasons, because the four All-Stars and Andre Iguodala are very talented. They have a lot of championship equity. But this was something that Steve had always wanted to use as a trump card to close games out. Now it's the playoffs. It's different. I think, you know, Steve was getting a lot of criticism for even having that lineup to begin with. And it's like, why risk that even more? But I think that illustrated that DeMarcus wasn't up to snuff for playing that facilitating, like, predominant offensive guy with the second unit, because that lineup was not good whatsoever.
Yeah, and Quinn Cook, who was so stellar down the stretch, really looked lost out there as well. When you combine Boogie having the poor game that he had with Quinn Cook not playing that well, you have Alphonso McKinney out there. Like, it was really rough goings, and the Clippers took full advantage. I do want to mention this because it's not going to get a lot of run in print. I don't think that many people are going to mention it. We take this for granted. I thought Andre Iguodala was fantastic again tonight. He's just so damn stellar on the defensive end, steady as she goes, and he made a lot of plays, and I thought his competence was sorely needed by the Warriors tonight. And you mentioned the death lineup coming in. It's not that they just came in. They came in with like 6.5 minutes left in the second quarter. Steve Kerr will sometimes use them in the second quarter, sometimes. It was a rarity to see them in the second quarter at all, as you alluded to. But for them to play more than a half a quarter in the second showed where the Warriors were with that second unit. I don't know if after one game you completely reshuffle it, but man, you might have to consider it, considering how poorly they played. And yes, Boogie is the hub of that second unit, and maybe they start running it through Clay. I don't know. I didn't like any of Boogie's post-up play. He had a couple that maybe went in, but he was fighting two or three guys. He was completely out of the flow of the game. He was pressing on both ends of the court. Maybe that's just first time in the playoffs, want to prove a point jitters. I thought the Warriors were forcing the ball to him a little bit as well, maybe as part of the let's let our big man eat and let him feel comfortable in the postseason. But again, both on the court and between the ears, there are issues that need to be worked out before game two. Not like the Clippers are going to win a game, but you just have to get the big man's confidence back. You have to make sure that he's part of this, because the more tape the Clippers can put on, just attacking Cousins, the easier it's going to be for Houston or whoever the Warriors play in the next round to just copy exactly what they did.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this regular season, it's been a pattern. Like, DeMarcus has shown obviously some good signs, some bad signs, but whenever he had a game that he wet the bed, I don't want to say it had to do with the criticism. Maybe it did to some extent, but usually the next game or thereafter, the Warriors would be able to not necessarily feature him at his best, but he would feature himself at his best. So I suspect that he'll bounce back, maybe game two, maybe game three. But I think the larger point, and it's the obvious point, but it needs to be said, is this is why it's much different for DeMarcus playing with Sacramento and New Orleans as opposed to the Warriors. Because here, hey, it's a luxury right now. Right. Hey, if you have a really bad game, well, guess what? Steph Curry can drop 38 points. Draymond Green could have 17 and have 13 in the first quarter, completely set the tone in the first quarter. Kevin Durant can go back to scoring mode, 23 points, and deal with Patrick Beverley's nonsense, and it almost becomes a non-factor. I mean, you also add in Klay didn't really shoot that well, getting 12 points, 5 of 14 from the field, 1 of 6 shooting. But I do agree, if they want to be at their best against opponents where it's actually going to matter more, yeah, they'll have to fix this a little bit.
Yeah, you'd like to have that luxury in working condition. Just going through the plus minus here, it was really telling how bad that second unit was with Klay Thompson and DeMarcus Cousins. Kevin Durant, plus 17. Draymond Green, plus 19. Stephen Curry, plus 27. Klay Thompson, 0. DeMarcus, minus 17. It just won't work. Again, he was unplayable. Stephen Curry was certainly playable tonight. We should take this for granted. He is so spectacular on a nightly basis, whether he had 15 boards tonight. I mean, he did it all. It seemed at times as if he was willing this team into a victory. 8 three-pointers, some of them just preposterous shots. Just, you have to laugh them off. They're so ridiculous, no one even tries them. He just always burns the Clippers, and I can't see a circumstance to where he doesn't do this 3 more times.
Yeah, and as interesting as we've seen Steph Curry do these things, I felt like this game was unique a little bit because he didn't get a lot of shots in the first quarter, and then After that second quarter lineup squandered things, Steph went into Steph mode where he started shooting from deep. But in its totality, yeah, he had 16 shots, but that's not a lot of shots. He was very efficient, and it wasn't just him throwing bombs from three. I mean, he threw a lot of them, 8 of 12, but he was also getting to the foul line. He was driving to the basket. He was getting contact. And I think when you have that, you know, kind of regiment, it seems even more impossible to guard him because it's not a matter of, oh, what's his guard of the three. If you have to account for him driving to the basket or moving off the ball to get to the basket, man, good luck trying to defend that. But also, he was a playmaker. He was getting 7 assists. He was getting 15 rebounds. Like, he just had an all-around game and productive, but he was also efficient, and that's very hard to do in the NBA, but obviously Steph is one of a kind.
Especially for a three-point shooter, and ultimately what the Clippers have to do with their lineup is they have to pick who Patrick Beverley is going to guard, and this leads into, they didn't put him on Stephen Curry tonight. I'm not sure if it would have changed anything, but certainly would have made Steph's life perhaps a little harder. Instead, they put him on Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant's a foot taller than Patrick Beverley, and I think the goal of that was, basically, we can't beat these guys, so let's see if they can beat themselves. And by putting a pest, listen, Pat Beverley's a Chicago guy. He's an all-Dieter team member. Like, he's a unique dude. He's someone that you want on your team and you hate to play against. Those are my kind of guys. I don't know if he made Durant's life a living hell, because Durant played just fine. It wasn't spectacular. It wasn't the best game we've ever seen from Kevin Durant, but it was in no way a bad game at all. But then they both got ejected with about 4 minutes and 40 seconds to play in the fourth quarter. And I don't think Durant lost his cool, but it got chippy. And Steve Kerr mentioned after the game, that's 2 technical fouls. Kevin gets 7. He had 16 in the regular season. Like, he's getting pretty good at these tees. And maybe the Clippers can't take a game off of the Warriors, but maybe they can take a game off of Kevin Durant in this process.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, the Clippers failed and gained into his head because – not only was Kevin efficient, but he was just laughing and clapping mockingly at him. Like, he just was very amused by it. But I think Steve Kerr had the best one-liner where he said the Clippers have made a lot of good trades this year. This was probably one of the best ones. So, like, I'm botching that a little bit, but that's his main point.
In Kevin Durant and for Patrick Beverley in that game.
Right. So Kevin didn't cost the Warriors a game tonight. He obviously played really well. The Warriors won. Steph Curry made the point that he's sure that if the game was closer, Kevin wouldn't do that. But do you wonder, did he potentially cost them down the line? Now, Kevin says he can control himself. You know, to his credit, like, yeah, on one hand, he's got a lot of technicals this regular season. He got it down to he technically went to 16, but then it was rescinded to now to 15. So, like, he was able to draw the line of not crossing to get a 1-game suspension. But I think that's playing roulette. You know, like, you just never know in the playoffs. Things can happen. And maybe you really do lose your cool over something more serious And then all of a sudden you feel like, man, I really wasted my technicals on Patrick Beverley.
That was exactly my point. I don't think Patrick Beverley's worth it. Let's just call the two what they were. That is what it is. But Durant has to be really careful, and that gives Beverley an advantage in this sort of game within a game. And it will be really interesting to see how this goes in game two, because ultimately, Durant can probably just make an example out of him by just, he doesn't even need to jump to get a bucket.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You always say, I make the Lakers plug, or here's another one, right?
Okay, everyone, get your pens out. Mark Medina is about to give a Lakers plug.
Okay, so I get why Kevin and some of the guys on the Warriors were saying, hey, well, Kevin wants to stand up for himself. It's good to set the tone. They're not going to allow the Clippers to push him around. I give you how Kobe Bryant handled Matt Barnes when he was with the Magic in 2010. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like a legendary game because Matt Barnes was doing things that Patrick Beverley was doing. And Kobe didn't back down. Like, he would bump him as well and kind of get him his face, but he never said anything. Mm-hmm. And then there was like that infamous play where, you know, Matt's pretending to inbound the ball, but Kobe doesn't flinch.
Yeah.
So how that applies to Kevin – Kevin can smile all he wants. He can laugh at him all he wants, but don't clap back at him and bump him and jeer at him and taunt him while he's on the ground. Like, I think there's a clear line with that. And I don't want to say Kevin got emotional. No. I just think he had a little too much fun.
It makes sense, though, why the Clippers are going after Kevin. Oh, I mean, his season has been defined by emotional conflicts. Him versus Draymond, him versus us, him versus the referees. I mean, this is something that the Clippers thought that this stood a chance. This is a last resort tactic that they used as the first resort. The trade-off, of course, then is, again, what I said earlier, no one's guarding Stephen Curry. And Klay Thompson is not going to only score 12 points again and go 1-for-6 from three. I mean, he had a lot of wide open looks tonight. They didn't fall. Played great defense, but like, that's it. Now, maybe Draymond doesn't do what Draymond does, but they've decided that they're not guarding Draymond and they're not guarding DeMarcus. And they don't know what to do when Kevon Looney's on the floor, because apparently Kevon Looney turned into a fadeaway jump superstar. And Andre Iguodala can control the entire court. So it's like, you're going to have one more kind of smoke than Patrick Beverley being a pest.
A quick aside, are you worried Kevon Looney's going to get paid and subsequently be gone this summer?
I will never worry about Kevon Looney getting what is rightfully his. Yes. I hope, I don't know what Kevin signs for this offseason, but if Kevon Looney doesn't get $1 more, everything's a travesty.
Fair point. Well, you know what? This actually might be one of those things that the Warriors know his value, but no one else. We'll see. But if you're doing fadeaways in a marquee game in the playoffs, I'm sure some teams will start calling. It was weird when I was talking to him at training camp about his whole offseason, the free agency, and like, how close was he to leaving. He said he didn't get any offers. Like, he got interest from teams like Houston and Philadelphia, Atlanta, and the Clippers, but they didn't actually give him any offers. So he came back because there weren't any offers on the table.
Completely preposterous to me that the Rockets wouldn't just pay him more than the Warriors just so that he can't play against the Rockets. But that's for the next round if the Houston Rockets get there. A couple of small side notes. Alfonso McKinney got six and a half minutes in this game, and I thought played pretty darn well. Yeah. He had a nice block to start it off. The Warriors stuck with Alfonso McKinney, particularly Steve Kerr, stuck with Alfonso McKinney, even though there were some really rough goings there for a while. And I think this series is showing why they had that patience. His size and physicality and energy proved positive in this contest. And he's built for the playoffs, at least in the sense of his body. And he knocked down his open three. If he can do that, if he can make a hustle play or two and knock down a three, he'll continue to get a couple of minutes a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think his main reason why he's in the rotation, the shooting's an added bonus, but I think that Steve Kerr really likes his defensive intensity matches up well as a wing. But going back to your earlier point about, you know, the second quarter lineups and what the thing is, I mean, you look at this, Steve Kerr had 13 guys in a playoff game. I mean, I wonder, does he wind up shortening that? Now, some of it maybe you can reduce a little bit because Jordan Bell and Jonas Jerebko didn't really play that much. But typically a playoff rotation is 7, 8, 9 guys. And when I'm looking at the lineup here, like, pencil in the starting lineup, obviously. Don't worry. Pencil in Kevon Looney. Pencil in Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala. That's 8. But everyone else, I almost feel like it's situational. Like, Quinn Cook, Alfonso McKinney, Andrew Bogut, Jordan Bell. Like, that's all matchup and just kind of combinations. But, you know, to go 13, that's I think, pulling something.
Okay, game two is Monday night here at Oracle Arena. Warriors won't practice tomorrow, but they'll have some availability for us. So just going into game two, because there's not a lot between now and then to really decipher, what's the big key for the Warriors in game two? What's the one thing that you need to see or stands out for you heading into that contest?
Well, I think if you talk to Steve Kerr, what he's most concerned about, the turnovers, 21 turnovers. I think when you break that down, as much as Draymond and Steph don't want to have 6 and 4 respectively, I think the worst ones were DeMarcus's 6, because I think the other ones from Draymond and Steph, that was actually a product of playing with a lot of energy and just right. trying to get the game going. And as much as you don't want to lose a possession, there is a larger purpose in play. And then I think Steve he always talks about like field goal attempts. The Clippers had 94. The Warriors had 91. Ideally, they want more than that. But I think the bottom line is, as long as they play with the intensity and the effort, all these things take care of itself. Like, you can microanalyze turnovers, DeMarcus not playing well. But if you have energy, you'll have Draymond doing what he did in the first quarter. Suddenly, Steph will get going. Maybe a role player will get going. And say one or two of their stars isn't going, it really doesn't matter. Like, I think that's the main thing. And then I think in the playoffs, it's more likely that the Warriors will have that energy. But you also have to take into account this was game one. Game two is naturally a letdown game. And if the Clippers are to steal one, maybe that would happen, because the Warriors kind of think, okay, well, we saw how easy it was in game one. We don't have to bring it as much. But that would kind of be a fallacy a little bit.
I do feel, even though you're right, and if the Clippers split it here, they're going to feel like they accomplished everything they wanted to and more. But man, it looked like they broke in that game. They just couldn't handle it. That was their best shot. They really did put a really solid performance on the court, and Stephen Curry just decided it wasn't their night. So I am interested to see the emotions that the Clippers come out with in game two, because again, that was as good as they're going to get. I can't imagine that they think they're going to play any better.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It's almost like how Cleveland was, different circumstances, right. But in the finals last year, where, hey, if they were going to steal a game, it would have been this game. And then for entirely different reasons of J.R. Smith not knowing the clock, it just kind of sucked a lot of energy out. And I think to some extent, this sucked a lot of energy out with the Clippers as well. The thing about them, though, is they've been overachieving all season. They've been playing with house money. But yeah, the Warriors, they have way too much talent. So like, this shouldn't be a difficult series. But if there is a game, whether it's game two or I could see maybe game four because the Sunday matinee, like if they don't have it, this is a kind of team that scratches and claws their way through victories. That could set themselves up to win a game. Probably nothing more than that. But, you know, in the first world universe that the Warriors are operating in, it's not a question of, are they going to win the series? It's more about, can they get through the series without needing to expend more energy than necessary so that they're fully ready for, you know, possibly Houston, you know, maybe Utah.
Yeah. This Clippers team does not strike me as a squad that's just going to fold in after they go down 2-0 or 3-0. They're not a 1-2-3 Cancun kind of a team. But no. I do feel like that, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them to muster up anything more than they had in game one. So the big story for me then going into game two is more of a macro thing. And that is, how does DeMarcus Cousins bounce back? I know that sounds micro, but I do feel like if he has another performance like this in game two, the Warriors have to take fairly serious stock of what it is he can provide. The Clippers are going to be the easiest team the Warriors play in this postseason. They have matchup problems, but he should be able to handle Montrezl Harrell. He should be able to handle Zubac. Like, I don't see anything on the court that the Clippers are doing that precludes DeMarcus Cousins from having a good game. And if Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell are able to carve him up and pick and roll, what the hell is James Harden going to do with him in the next round? Or what the hell is Ricky Rubio and Gobert going to do with him in the next round? There are a lot of questions that need to be answered again. They've been brought up again by this game one. Boogie can put them all to rest in game two by having a monster game, playing a solid. He doesn't have to be spectacular. He doesn't have to be Andrew Bogut out there. He's playing solid defense, not being a total liability on that end of the court. The Warriors can certainly help him out in that way, but I don't think energy was lacking tonight. I'm very interested to see how DeMarcus handles this, because also I don't think that he handled the questions about his poor game all that well either. He was very short, rather terse, tried to brush it off as if it was nothing. That doesn't lend itself to a I'm not mad argument that he's trying to make. He was kind of telling on himself a little bit there. So he is in his own head a little bit, I would imagine. And I'm interested to see how that bounces back. You mentioned astutely, he usually comes back from poor games. He needs to do it, though, because the Clippers are going to come at him again and again and again. He needs to rise to the occasion, even though it will probably have nothing to do with the overall scoreline in either this series or in game two.
Yeah, and this is all intertwined, but the other thing I'm also curious is, what does Steve Kerr do with second quarter lineups and right. just the rotation? You know, part of it had to do with DeMarcus's struggles, but I think, you know, the Warriors are very cognizant of it, of that. You know, on one hand, they're not going to say the defensive shortcomings are on DeMarcus Cousins. You know, when you look at the numbers, defensively, they weren't good when he wasn't on the floor. When he was on the floor, they were actually a little bit good when he first started out, because they were trying. But with that being said, there's a reason why they got Andrew Bogut. They know that the best case and most likely scenario is DeMarcus is going to be good offensively when he's at his best, and maybe he limits his fouls, but they're not thinking of him as a rim protector beyond maybe drawing a few charges. That's where Andrew Bogut comes into play. And then when they go small, that's where Kevon Looney and maybe Jordan Bell goes into play. And yeah. Steve didn't do that right away. So I'm wondering, does he not mess around when that happens and he goes small right away? Does he go with the death lineup even earlier, or does he go with your guy Kevon Looney even earlier? Yeah. Like that's going to be a very interesting thing of how he handles those different rotation combinations.
Again, I would not be shocked if we see more Bogut in this series, particularly when Lou Williams is on the floor with Harrell. If the Clippers are going to continue to insist on their two best players coming off of the bench, then maybe the Warriors have to make an adjustment in terms of Boogie's rotations, where he starts the game, but it's out there. We get some Bogut in the middle of the first quarter minutes. Maybe they kind of split it up three ways with Cousins, then Bogut, and then Looney to maybe close out. But again, it's one game. You don't want to put too much stock into it, but it's one game that's a lot more intense and a lot more focused than any game we've seen prior to this point. In fact, you can probably take weeks worth of focus and intensity and game planning and boil them in to this one contest. So Warriors, Clippers, Monday night. Mark will be there. I'll be there. If you haven't subscribed already to the San Jose Mercury News and the East Bay Times, we have a great deal. First off, what the hell are you doing? Second, we still have this great deal for you. And if you are a subscriber, please hit us up. We've had a couple of people, just a couple, which is honestly disappointing. But we've had a couple of people hit me up on the DMs. We're hitting them up with some goodies and some gifts. I'm sending them the gifts and the gifts. Hit us up with your subscription info on Twitter. If you haven't subscribed already, now is the time to do it. It is hot, fresh content coming for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the entire NBA playoffs. Clay deal, 11 months, 11 cents a day. What else in the world can you get for 11 cents a day?
Well, you can get even more. You get a free Warriors Championship commemorative coffee table book from last year, hardcover. It's amazing. I think the retail price is like $40. So
yeah, it's crazy.
It's a really good deal. And yeah, you get to read your stuff, your analysis at D. Kurtenbach on Twitter. I'm at @MarkG_Medina. I mean, this is where you want to get Warriors and, you know, Bay Area sports in general. And if you want to even extend it even more, your local news. So
God forbid we get our local news with our sports coverage. And, of course, Sharks coverage from Paul Gackle. We have our wonderful baseball writers, Kerry Crowley, killing it on the Giants beat. Football's coming up. You got to be around for the NFL draft. Our wonderful NFL coverage, man. What more could you want for 11 cents a day?
Yeah. And also, what more can you want? The Warriors HQ podcast. We're up and running iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, everywhere you can listen to them. And we'll have a podcast after every playoff game to break everything down for you.
Yeah, we might do some extra ones in between. Who the hell knows? Especially with these weeks off, we're going to get bored and want to talk some basketball. That was the longest promo read we've ever done. It was fantastic. I felt like it transcended everything else. I'm just dragging it out at this point. Okay, Warriors, Clippers, Monday. We'll talk to you after that one.